Joe's, we normally do 1 hour conversations, but we talked to somebody and we enjoyed it so much and it went on for so long that we've broken this up into two parts.
Yeah, for the first time in the Gavin Jewel Meets series, really, I think, it's a two-part.
We've made history.
Yeah, history, because that you're right, it's so interesting on his career, and that's very much the in his life, the first part, what he did as a youngster, how he became a pro.
And what he wants to do next and his vision in the game, and this is one of the thinking men's footballers, I think. And the second part, which will come out after this one, is he has a lot to say. He's worked with some of the biggest names in the history of the game, and he studied them, and he has a lot to share about them. Go ahead, tell us who you are.
I'm Ben Davis, footballer for Tottenham Hotspur in Wales, and I'm a big fan of your show.
There you go, right answer. Thank you.
Great introduction.
One of the things I did not know about Ben, and which I can exclusively reveal, is that, he's Welsh, but he lived in Denmark for a long time as a kid.
Yeah, and for both of us, who obviously didn't grow up in this country, but came later, much later than he went to Denmark. But it's really good to have his opinion on moving abroad, living abroad with a different culture, learning a different culture, not so much the language, but all of that, being immersed for such a young age, also football-wise, in a different culture, different training, different mentalities, all of that, and how much he enjoyed it or maybe not.
I moved to Denmark when I was 8 years old until I was 10 and a half before I came back for secondary school. My dad worked for a Danish company called Grumfos, which he had the opportunity to go and work there full time. I think he was doing 4 or 5 days a week away from home, so the option came for us all to move there, and it was a big change to move to a country. We didn't speak the language, we didn't know really where we were going. This was dad's work in a small town called Viborg.
Yeah, which, by the way, for those who don't know, if we just look at a map of Denmark, this isn't Copenhagen. Like,
no,
it's not kind of quaint.
This was 3.5 hours minimum away.
It's middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to sound...
Well, as a kid, I loved it there, but I have had Christian Eriksen make some fun of me that it was maybe farmer's country over time.
If Christian Eriksen makes fun of you.
Come on, I know.
But
you'd been playing football already.
So I was in Swansea's academy.
Right, so you were already good then. You were
I was all right, I was with this one. I was also 7, 8 years old, so
there
was that. But I moved to Denmark. Swansea always promised me they would keep my contract as a young player, which was nice. I didn't I didn't expect that. I probably would have kicked up more of a fuss about moving had I been told I have to leave. We went to Viborg, and the academy system is a bit different in Denmark when we were there. Viborg, the club, VFF, had maybe 6 different teams at my age group.
Wow.
For every age group. And it was quite simply based off your talent. And I remember the first day I went, I was with maybe the 6th team. Yeah. And I was like, Dad, where have you sent me here? This is not where I want to go. But then I think the next training session, I got pushed up to a good team. And honestly, I loved it. I loved it. I thought the setup for junior football at the time was so much better than what we had back home.
I'm not surprised, yeah.
We used to play on different size pitches. UK, you play with, it's probably changed now, but even at a local club I was playing, the plastic goals that get pulled out.
Yeah,
5-a-side. The 5-a-side. And you're on any old field that you can find to put it out, whereas out there we went straight to 7-a-side. Goals were a little bit bigger. Pitch was a bit bigger. Big focus on technical aspects of your game. So I played there. I played maybe 3-4 months before I got told, okay, the league's finished now. And we moved to indoor football because it was winter.
Yeah.
And for me, winter time was, it rains every week you play. Or more times than not, the game's called off. Because whoever owns the pitch is like, well, there's no way we're letting an under-8s game go ahead here. So they move you for 3 months when it snows, when it's cold, to handball courts. And you play 4 or 5 a side on those courts. And it's that's when it becomes really technical. You use the walls, you use yeah. that. And I'd say that was probably a big part of my development, especially when I came back. My technical side of my game was very good. I used to actually play in goals.
No way.
On the handball courts. You weren't allowed to use your hands in wow. goals. So it was all about playing out from the back. It's all about being in the right place to block. You were expected to dribble out from goals. So, yeah, it was a fun experience. Yeah.
Okay, so when you go there and Ange comes and like, oh, my job isn't just to boot it or pass the ball short to the defensive playmaker. You're like, all right, yeah, this takes me back.
Yeah, a little bit, but it's probably a bit different when you've got some of the strikers running there, you know. But similar type of energy that comes from that.
I'm fascinated, as you know, by the development side. There's a question that Jules always rolls his eyes, but I ask every professional footballer.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I know you can't be modest. You have to be as objective as you can. Right? Yeah. Pretend that you're coaching already, since you're okay. coaching. At what age were you on a team where there was somebody who was clearly better than you?
So you were not the best anymore.
You're no longer the best player on your team.
Yeah, but I think that's probably a common misconception. I don't know if this is for everyone, but I never felt I was the best on my team. Even for the Swansea Academy, even when I went to Denmark, I was...
Even when you were playing with the sixth team of the under-9s at Viborg?
No, absolutely not. There were some very good players there. I'm deadly serious about this. And maybe I was the best on my school team, right? That kind of stuff is okay. fine.
That counts.
But when you go to, you know, the academies, these are the best of the best that are 9, 10 years old. So... even when I got to maybe 14s, under 16s, I knew I was good, but I never felt like I'm elite compared to these guys. I think that feeling was never really there for me. I really mean that. And then I think the older I got probably was where I started to realize, okay, I think I have a bit more than these guys. But I think football is a big chunk of luck as well. I think when I got to be around the first team, the bigger difference was that I was able to make the step up rather than I was going to the first team and being so good that they could not pick me. It was about being capable and making that step up and not being shown up, not looking like I was out of my depth. And, you know, I played with some of the best players that I played with at under 16 or under 15. They don't play football anymore. And
that's crazy,
I think a big part of it is probably a mentality as well. There are a lot of guys that just couldn't hack those big days where you have a big game and you know you need to perform, and it was where everything crumbled for them. And I think that probably goes under the radar. I think that would probably be very similar for a lot of players.
On the Viborg and the Danish influence in you, because I think there's, for us who moved here, we were not from here, when we moved here, there's a feeling that there's England and Great Britain, and then you don't really look at what's happening outside, and even British players in general don't really move, maybe because the Premier League is the best in the world anyway, so they don't feel like... But would you say, even with that small experience that you had as such a young kid, that there's a lot to learn from outside here, and that maybe British people, and we include ourselves because our kids are here, that maybe they should look a little bit... And Ange is a good example, because as an Australian, they've never been an Australian manager in the Premier League ever before, which is strange. There haven't been many French. I mean, the Italians...
Yeah, we've won a few things.
Whatever. But you see what I mean? There's a lot to learn maybe from outside, and sometimes it feels like British people just don't want to look, and they're just happy with what they have, believing that this is the best, which might be true.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, I think we're all in this Premier League bubble sometimes, that this is the best league in the world and it's the most viewed, but there is so much talent out there in the world of football, and we'd be naive to think that just because we're from here that we know better than anyone else. Yeah. I went to Denmark, and probably the one thing I realized is wherever you are in the world, that club of your city is the most important.
Yeah.
And playing for Viborg's academy for me at the time was the most important team to play for, and I loved it, and it always gave me that perspective that, look, whatever level you end up at, well, what a privilege to play for any team in any place. And I think that's maybe lost in the Premier League especially. It becomes everything to everyone, and look, I think you'd ask most football players around the world where they want to play as well.
True. They would say Premier League.
They would say the Premier League. So it's a difficult one not to be like incredibly grateful and lucky to be born, be around the Premier League. But that doesn't mean you can dismiss everything that's out there, because there are a lot of good players that may just not get the opportunities.
Well, it's interesting because obviously Jules and I cover the big five European leagues and more. And I don't know if you agree with this, Jules, but what you just said is really important about the Premier League and, you know, this idea of not considering what else is out there. But I would argue that the other four big leagues are far behind the Premier League just in terms of the diversity of thought about looking abroad. I mean, I think one of the strengths of the Premier League has actually been the fact that you've got so many owners who aren't here, but also so many, and obviously you've had many coaches and players, but also club executives, CEOs, directors of scouting, directors of football. I mean, I don't know how many, like, if you were to count, like, the number of foreign directors of football or academy directors in the other four leagues, I think you would probably count them on one hand, Jules, right?
Yeah.
Whereas here, there's many, many more, and there's many more influences. So it almost strikes me as if one of the strengths of the league, even though they could do a lot more, is that they try to look beyond and seek the best talent regardless of where they're from.
Well, probably you just have to look at the player base as well. I don't know, but it's not primarily a British player base that we have in the Premier League. We have people from players from all sorts of nationalities that play here across the world. So, yeah, it is pretty diverse, but I do think that maybe it's more in the sense that we've never been taught that we can look elsewhere for football as well. There was never really... I moved to Denmark, yes, and I enjoyed it, but ultimately the aim was to play in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I never thought, I would love to one day play in Serie A.
You never thought?
Not as a kid.
The
older I've got, yes, maybe. Or when I was a professional footballer, and you get to stages now where you're like, yeah, that would be an amazing opportunity. But as a kid, when I was 13, 14, 15, I don't have that viewpoint that probably some of the kids in Europe who always are looking, how can I get to go to the Premier League?
I agree. So Swansea, let's continue on Swansea, because you then come back home to Swansea, you go back to the academy, and then because you became really, really good when you were younger, then you break into the first team.
Mm-hmm.
How was that time? That step up from youth level and reserve team to first team is huge, we know it. How did you adapt, and how was it to play in a team where Brendan Rodgers was the manager when you had Joe Allen, so Welsh legends with you, but also, did you play with Michu, for example? We were wondering.
Yeah, Michu's a very good friend of mine.
Oh, we love that. I mean...
And actually, if before you talk about when you got there, what happened the year before? Because we were talking off air about the last time... any of us paid to go look at a football match. I'm proud to say I paid to go to a football match more recently than you two. But it was interesting because it was a promotion playoff, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the playoff final.
Can you tell me about that? You're not a professional at that stage.
I had just been told that I was going to get a professional contract, not signed. But
the ink hadn't dried yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So you didn't know if you were going to get that big bump.
Yeah, there was no big bump. My first contract was... very little bit more than my youth team contract.
Really? Really?
Yeah, it was £400 a week in my first contract.
Wow.
I played in the Premier League on £400 a week. I was playing. And the Sun did a big, like, on their goals bit, or the front page of it was a picture of me and a picture of Yaya Toure with my salary saying £400 a week against £250,000 a week. And I was getting messages on Twitter from, like, plumbers saying, you can come and work for me for the week if you'd rather. So it was, looking back, it's probably a good thing.
But you purchased a ticket to
let's get back to that, sorry. Well, I was a youth team player. My dad purchased the ticket. I'll put that up. But we went to Wembley. We saw the Swans get promoted against Reading, which was an incredible day because it meant so much to the city of Swansea, but also to me. And my first professional contract, talk about luck and timing, was going to be with a team that was a Premier League team the next season. So I remember the build-up to signing my contract was... pretty brutal. It was like an X Factor. They put 10 of us second year apprentices in a room at the stadium, and you got called up individually to go up to a box where Brendan Rodgers was there and our head of youth team was there, and it was a simple yes or no. And I think three.
You had no indication before if it might be a yes or no, nothing?
No indication.
What was your feeling? Did you feel like you're going to get it? Or?
You must have known you were pretty good at that stage.
I felt confident, but
you never know.
I didn't feel great when the first guy came down, and I thought, yeah, he's going to get one as well. Got told that he was getting let go.
Oh,
so I was like, you know, they have no obligation to take any of us at that stage. It was because there was no under 23s football. It was simply if you're getting a professional contract, you're training with the first team next season. So you had to be good enough.
Yeah.
But I remember going up. I got told I was getting one. I think I started crying. I was just like over the moon. I couldn't believe it. I was actually a professional footballer at that stage. So Brendan Rodgers was the manager. Pretty crazy situation. First day, we arrive at the training centre, which was a health club, which for us, it sounds crazy now, but like that's what we were dealing with. And that was, we didn't have our own training ground. As a youth team, we used to arrive at the stadium, do all our chores, a minibus to the local pitch at the university, and then minibus back to shower there. No breakfast, no lunch, like we get now. Whereas the first team had the health club, which was a big deal for us.
This is basically a gym, right?
This is a gym.
There's women like in spandex doing like kickboxing in the next room, or maybe it wasn't that fancy a gym.
There's women doing. No, it was a semi-fancy gym. It was for us, but there's, you know, there's a little cafe area where people were having their coffees when we turned up in the morning. We had a little roped-off conservatory where the first team could have some scrambled eggs if you wanted it when you came in. But we all had a pass. We all had to let ourselves in. We used to go to the public changing room. This is a Premier League.
And this is not a Premier League in the 1970s. You are not that old. You are 30 years old, right?
Yeah.
And this is just 12 years ago.
Yeah, 12 years ago when Swansea first arrived in the Premier League.
It blows my mind.
And we used to change in the public gym, the public locker room.
With random people.
With random people who'd be like, oh, good game on the weekend. One of those, or if it wasn't such a good game, they'd probably let you know as well.
Wait, okay.
So we had managers. Brendan Rodgers would have been there. Chris Davis, who now works at Spurs with me, would attest to this being exactly the same. The manager's office was under the stairs in the health club. It had like a little code. And when Christmas time came, he got kicked out for Santa to go in there for the kids. It was crazy. It was crazy. But it was all we knew. Well, for me anyway, as a young kid coming in, I didn't know any different. So for me, the health club was an upgrade on what I'd had the year before.
You thought Manchester United trained like this too?
Pretty much, right. Yeah.
I think the transition was maybe not as difficult as it might have been had you gone to a proper massive training where you would have felt the pressure, where you would have all those trophies in the trophy cabinet, you know, shirt from all the players or photos or whatever, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. And
it felt more normal.
Let me tell you,
right?
It felt like the first team players that were there were very down to earth.
Yeah.
They were proper professionals that, you know, had worked from, they were probably seven or eight of them had come up from League One when Roberto Martinez took over, and then Brendan took them up from the Championship. And credit to Swansea, they didn't go out and spend a fortune on new players. They kept a similar team, and that team thrived in the Premier League with Joe Allen, who was incredible that season before he went to Liverpool. You had Leon Britton, Gary Monk played a lot, Ashley Williams, Nathan Dyer. These guys were guys who done it the hard way and deserved their opportunity in the Premier League, and man, they thrived that first year. So my experience that year was I was around the first team, I trained every single day with them, but I didn't play. I wasn't in the match day squads, but I never felt that I wasn't a part of it. But then come the end of the season, again, I'd signed a one-year deal, my first pro contract. I had to basically figure out what I was going to do. So similar thing again, got called into Brendan's office, and then he said, okay, we want to give you a two-year contract going forward. You've done very well training with the team, and to figure out where we could maybe put you on loan next year, find out where your best position is, whether it's a left back, center back, and we can go from there over the summer. So delighted, signed my very little increase, more. and then I had 2 years So I thought with Brendan Rodgers, where it was going to develop, maybe go on loan to Championship League One and we'll see what happened. And then Liverpool came in for Brendan Rodgers and uprooted all of my plans and dropped us with Michael Laudrup, who definitely didn't know who I was or anything about the academy guys who'd come up to the first team. So similar thing like we were talking about earlier, that excitement is like, but there's a lot of apprehension at this point, because it's like, what does he want to do with the young guys? There's now maybe six or seven of us, can't all be training with the first team as well every time. So it was a little bit of uncertainty. We turned up, we had 2 days before the team went to a pre-season tour of the US, Swansea's first big pre-season tour that we went on. And we did a training session. Laudrup said, I'm going to look at everybody. I haven't decided who's going. This is our squad. We'll see where we get. And that training session, I trained really well.
Did you feel you were ready? Did you feel then that...
No. I was. For me, I was still a young kid. I was just turned 19. I was... Being around the first team was still everything to me. I was like, I'm learning so much. Even if I went on loan to the Championship League One, I'd be like, okay, this is your time to try and like play men's football. But me and one other guy were on the team sheet to go to this US preseason tour. And it's simply just a like piece of paper on the wall. Your name is ticked next to it. There were maybe six or seven that got left behind to train with a development coach.
Okay.
So it's all pretty, it's pretty intense, right? Like so it was crazy. I was so excited, couldn't believe that I was one of the kids. Like, I was like, yes, I'm going. Like, got my bag packed.
Amazing. You're on this flight. Went your to passport.
Went to Colorado to play in Denver. And so when it turned up at the airport, there were like 8 business class flights, rest are in economy. So that then became right, manager, a couple of staff, okay, they're business class, but like, who gets the next 4? Right? So I think it ended up, it was like, right, seniority, we're working down, like, who's been here the longest can have it.
Fair enough.
So I went to Colorado, first game. You can imagine a load of senior pros, they were like, okay, I need 45 minutes, easy, whatever. Manager picked 2 teams of 11 for 45 minutes, and I played the second half. And even then, I was like, all right, this is... good opportunity.
Yeah.
Left back Alfredo Bissoni played the first half. That was pretty clear that was like a start in 45, and then second was subs and whatever. And I played really well. Even now I look back, I was like,
really?
I played really
well. You remember that game now?
Game. Yeah.
You still remember it?
Yeah, I remember it clearly.
Really?
Clearly. Yeah, it was at the Colorado Rockies Stadium, which is like a mile above sea level, so the altitude is crazy. You can't breathe. It's so tough. But I was this young kid. I was like, boom, boom, boom. You do not stop for 45 minutes. It's like, it's what you've got to show. Played really well. It was all. I can remember everything. I came in the dressing room after the game, and the guys like gave me a clap. So well played. I was like, really? Wow, I must have done okay. And that trip was where I was rooming with Michu, actually.
Really?
First trip. Yeah. Who didn't speak a word of English at that point, so I don't know, you can imagine. Got put with him, played another game, same thing, 45-45, but at this point I'm like, oh, maybe I'm capable here. Third game, he picked a team to play 70 minutes and a team to play 20, and yeah, I started in that. Wow. And that for me was like, wow, like maybe you've gone up in the pecking order here.
Yeah.
We had Neil Taylor to come back, who was
of course
first choice left back. And you know, I was delighted. I was like, maybe I'm going to be second choice, maybe I'll get on the bench a few times this year, that would be incredible. And I did. I first game of the season came around, went to QPR away, and I remember Michael Laudrup pulled me and said, I want you to be around the first team. You're going to be 70th man, I think, or 90th man, depending on the subs. You're not going to be involved in the squad, but I want you to be around the team, travel with us, because I'd like to have you involved in the first team squad. So, wasn't involved in that game. Michu scores one unbelievable
that's
goal.
Incredible.
He
season,
scores two or three.
Yeah.
And, we beat QPR 5-0 away, first game of the season. We've gone into the game. People are like, wow, this QPR away is a hard game. Like, it's like, draw would be a good result. And then Michu turned up and probably was like, no, this ain't too bad, this Premier League, right? Played a midweek game against Barnsley. I was left back. John Stones right back for Barnsley in a cup game,
oh my
League
God,
Cup game. Yeah, both young kids played against each other. Had a like, good game. First start at the Liberty Stadium, was delighted. And then the following weekend, name's on the bench this week. And at this point, I hadn't even thought that my weekend was going to be busy. I thought I'd go watch the game, train in the morning, watch the game. Fine. On the bench, we go 3-0 up after 50 minutes. I got told at halftime, be ready, because Angel Rangel, right back's on a yellow card. And I was thinking, man, I can't go play right back my first ever Premier League game, right? So I'm warming up, I'm so nervous. And I think Mitro scored again, an intercepted back pass. We're cruising in the game. Last 10 minutes, I see Laudrup calls me, and he puts me on for my debut in the Premier League. And at this point, amazing. But even then, I was like, this doesn't really feel real. It all kind of happened without time to process it, I guess. Came on for 10 minutes. The best moment, right? I was so excited. But still, I'd had plans after. I was going to watch my mates play a cricket game after. So I went straight to that game, watched it, and they were like, didn't you just play here? I was like, yeah, fine. So played following week, again, was on the bench. And Neil Taylor broke his leg.
Yes.
In one of the second games of the season, and at 20 minutes maybe. And I got called to go on. So this is like, oof, okay, this is your test now.
So now, is the nerve still very much there? Or because you've made your debut, it's a little bit less?
A lot less.
Although you know you're going to play a lot less.
But I didn't have time to warm up, so I was just chucked on, which was probably better in hindsight. I got thrown on, in I go, and it was against Adam Johnson, was playing right wing, who'd just been signed for Sunderland for 12, 14 million. So, you know, this is a guy from City, and I'm thinking, oof, okay, this is a tough game ahead, but do your best. And again, I had another really good game. I played well, and at that point, I probably thought, like, wow, I've got a chance here.
Yeah.
Got told by one of the coaches, I think, and also my dad, was like, look, don't be disappointed if they go and buy someone in the transfer window. There was a few days left.
Yeah.
If they go buy someone and then you play maybe one or two more and then they put this guy in, because you're 19, ultimately, it's a big step up. And they signed Dwight Tindalli from FC 20.
Yes,
right-footed left back, but a good player. Like, had won the league with 20. Was a good player. And I thrived that year. I missed the first one, wasn't in the squad. I played 37 out of 38 Premier League games. I played everyone for the rest of the season. And we won the Carling Cup.
Yeah, of course.
The same season. So,
how was Laudrup as a... Because obviously you wouldn't have seen him as a player, right?
But he lived in Denmark, where Laudrup was still his god to the people of
Denmark. I hadn't seen him as a player, I knew about Laudrup. And trust me, every player at the time was looking at videos.
Or was he one of those guys who had all the...
Could he still play?
He trained every single day.
Really?
Every single day. I've never... no manager does that, but it was fun for
him.
He was the best player.
Was he?
He was the best player in training by far.
No way.
It was insane. All the players were... in awe of him.
But I mean, in terms of technical ability, mm-hmm. and the way you strike a ball, whatever, like, we're not, obviously, I'm assuming he wasn't running, because at that age, right?
No, he did. He had a go.
Really?
But relative to the super technical players mm-hmm. you played with later, like, that's not something you would necessarily, you would lose with age. So he would have been, like, whether it's Eriksen or Harry Kane.
One of the best. Like, even now, you could speak to anybody from that Swansea team and they'd probably say the same. Technical ability. Also, how different his style was to the modern game. It was incredible. It was incredible. Possession drills, he was involved in everything. He was doing no-look passes. He was flicking it over people's heads.
You could just see the game before all of you.
It was insane. It was amazing.
Is his brain working faster as well, the technical ability?
Yeah, for sure. Let's be real. We were Swansea. You'd just been promoted to the Premier League, but he was at Barcelona. You're playing special players, but he was one of the greats. And some of the skills he used to pull out.
Really?
People had, you assume that all these skills started with players like Ronaldinho when they started playing this. Laudrup was, I don't know how many years before, but some of the stuff he did was just insane. No one else, I'd not seen anybody else who could do it.
So
maybe I was
really
young, but I really think that he was one of the best I'd seen.
So I remember when Michel Platini became the France national team head coach. He's just retired.
And he would grow really frustrated about doing something at training and the players not being able to do it. So he would take the ball, he'd say, give me the ball, I'll show you. And he would show them exactly how to do it. Same when Thierry Henry became the Monaco coach. He was very young, first experience as a manager. He would put a drill together at training. Some of the players would struggle. He said, give me the ball, I'll show you. Would do it and say, like, this is how you do it. And I think there's something about the great players who become manager that at time can be really frustrated if their players can't do what they're asking them to do, or certainly can't do things that they can still do even at their age when they're 40, 45, 50-year-olds. And was it the same with Laudrup, with you at Swansea, or is it because Swansea being a smaller club with players maybe not as established as the French national team or even Monaco in France, that it didn't matter so much maybe if the coach was a bit patronising or a bit like showing off or, you know, a bit frustrated by the lack of ability in a way of his own players?
And I think that seems to be a common thought around football, that there's been plenty of amazing ex-players that have struggled as a manager because of that reason, simply. But, well, look, we didn't go in depth into too much in tactical and the details of how we're going to play with Laudrup. It was all, we're going to try and play with the ball, and we're going to do possession drills day after day. We're going to stick to our principles, which Roberto Martinez and then Brendan put in place of us playing out from the back. And I think he tried to simplify the game for us.
Okay.
And for that first season, football was simple. We were going into games, we were playing some incredible football.
Yeah, I remember, man.
I don't want to get too technical, but there was lots of stuff where, like, you pass the ball to him in training, he'd find a way to turn and get out of that situation and play it forward. Where he would tell our centre midfielders and our defenders, he'd be like, instead of passing to the first guy who you'd need him to turn and under pressure and then play forward, why not pass to the second guy behind him? He can set it back.
Yeah.
And you can turn without the ball, and then you can play it forward. And it's pretty basic stuff, but that was kind of the premise of how we were successful. We didn't put it into people who were under pressure, despite Leon Britton being one of the best.
Really,
we didn't lose the ball that season. But it was always trying to go forward, set back, play.
Yeah.
And it's breaking lines, whatever you want to call it now. It's a bit more technical, but it was very simple, and that team we had was just, was fun.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Learned a lot.
It was after that that Tottenham came calling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm fascinated is, I believe you and Harry Kane are the same age.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me, when you arrive at, so then you would have arrived at Spurs.
You had no doubt about Spurs, right? Once they came in, you said, yeah, this is great.
No, at the time there were a couple of clubs who were interested. I'd played pretty much two full seasons on the bounce in the Premier League, which at 19 for a defender is, it's not really done that often. Mm. And there were a few clubs around, but Tottenham were the first ones that showed any real interest, and it was a club I thought I could grow at. Look, I was from Swansea, it's a one club city. The whole, you don't realise how big the other clubs are.
Yeah.
And moving to Tottenham, I think, was a big wake up call for me. I was like, well, this is proper now. We're like at a big club, this big fan base in a big city. It was intense, but yeah, it was the right move for me.
So you were 21 at this stage?
Yes.
So I'm curious, when you arrived there, because most people know the Harry Kane story about how he kept going on loan, scoring a bazillion goals, the League Cup, blah, blah, blah. And then at some point, the club the manager starts playing him regularly, and then, you know, thus is born the legend of Harry Kane. But you, when you got there, you were training with him, and he was still kind of there and not there and on loan, and I'm assuming you would have had preseason with him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that, honestly? Like, we won't tell him.
Yeah.
Like, did you see, like, oh, hey, this dude should be playing all the time because he's really, really good?
Did he
improve?
It was pretty crazy because when I arrived, there were a few times where Harry Kane maybe wasn't even in the squad for games. But what you saw in training was this, he was hungry. You could see he had he was an incredible finisher. That was the biggest thing that stands out. He'd get the ball and you'd play a small-sided game, and every single game he was scoring 3-4 goals.
Yeah.
Maybe his link-up play wasn't there. Maybe his passing wasn't there, but he was so driven that when I get the ball, it's going in the net.
Yeah.
And you could see it over and over and over. And there were times where, at the start of that season, when Pochettino came in, he wasn't selected, and he was coming on, and I think for Villa away he came on, scored a free kick and never looked back, was in the team pretty much every week from then on, and he's done pretty well.
When you move from a smaller club like Swansea to one of the biggest clubs in the Premier League, what's the feeling when you arrive? So the first time you get into that dressing room, the training ground was not the one that you have now.
The training ground was just built. So yeah. I went straight to this one.
Yeah, that's your first season, right. That's right. So you arrive in the training ground, brand new training ground as well.
For those who don't know, Spurs have a really, really nice training ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very nice.
And is it like you want to make friends in that dressing room? Are there people who come towards you and say, listen, I've been here before, I'll show you around? Do you feel a bit lonely? How does it work?
I think there was definitely that nervousness feeling, like I was just a young kid. Yeah. Looking back, I was so young being told you have to move up to London, you're going to go into this dressing room, and there's no one really there to hold your hand through this. Yes, once you arrive at a club like Tottenham, you're fending for yourself because you're competing with everybody there. I remember Michael Dawson, who was captain at the time. Yeah. He was amazing with me, and I've been very grateful to the way he helped me out. We were put in a little hotel next to the side of the motorway before I'd found a place to live, and he used to pick me up some days, drop me home. He was very helpful, and you know, it was intense. You know, the first few times I went in, I didn't start the first couple of games. I just moved from Swansea. I was playing every game, so I was a bit like, oh, have I made a mistake?
Yeah.
You know, should I have made this jump? Swansea then went and started playing an unbelievable football again and kicked on, and I was thinking, oh, if I'd have stayed a year, maybe I could have done this. But we had to be patient. I was working with Pochettino, who was a young, exciting, up-and-coming manager as well. And I think most of that team over that first season was changing, and we started to bring some more younger guys in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't straightforward for me because I didn't play as much as I wanted to, but I still managed to play 28, 29 games, which, looking at it, it's not too bad for you at 21 at Tottenham Hotspur. And I never really looked back. It's been home for the last 10 years now.
Who impressed you the most when you arrived? Was there something the first few training sessions where you thought, okay, whoever that, I mean, I don't know,
yeah,
him or them or whatever, was there something like that?
I think the one that probably stood out was Christian Eriksen.
Really?
It was, you know, this wasn't a, you know, he wasn't a physical dominating player. He was just somebody who had so much quality. It always seemed like he used to get the ball and have more time than everybody else.
Really?
And what Christian was amazing at, and still is, and he's one of the best players for me, and he's like a manager on the pitch. He dictates where everybody goes, dictates the tempo of the game. If there's times where the game is getting away from us, he's the one that slows it down. He's the one that plays the ball that maybe is a bit hopeful, that goes out for the throw-in down there. But you know what? That's exactly what the team needed at the time, to get a rest, to go up the field. And that's not the stuff that's going to get plaudits. The stuff that he's going to get plaudits for, those free kicks, the amazing through balls, the passing. But the ability to control all 11 around you, one of the best for me.
Oh, wow.
No, I was going to ask about just because you mentioned living in the hotel next to the motorway. And one of the things you told us, I mean, giving away secrets here, but obviously the Spurs training ground is sort of just north of London. As you got older, you started moving more and more towards the center of London, right? You've lived in two or three different places, right?
Yep.
Why is that? Could you just explain that process about like how like a young footballer things? So because originally you said, oh, I want to be next to the training ground in the countryside and near Jules's house.
Yep.
And then little by little, like, not many footballers choose to live in the center of town.
Yeah. So when I first moved to Tottenham, if I'm totally honest, you know, Tottenham's in London. I didn't know where in London it was North London. I didn't know where Enfield, where the training ground is. I didn't know where Barnet was, these places which are nearby, right? I was from a town called Neath. I didn't know. It was just up the M4 and M25 and you're there. So I think I first moved to maybe 15 minutes away from the training ground. And I think that mindset is, it's the only thing that's familiar to you in this city is the training ground. That's going to be your home.
Yeah, you spend a lot of time
for the next season. So living 45 minutes away would be a bit silly, right? If you don't know anyone, if you have no attachment to any areas, then the training ground's going to be your home. So why not live nearby? And if you want to go into London for the day, then hop on the tube or you drive in. Yeah. So it's easy. I think the longer that I've been at Spurs, you meet people. I met my now wife here. She lived closer to Central, so happy wife, happy life, right? You move closer to people you're familiar around, yeah. And you get connections with areas, and I think that's kind of it.
Do you think of yourself as like a city guy, or like when you first moved into your place?
Yeah,
right?
London was pretty busy when I moved.
Was it? Yeah,
from, South
that's
Wales.
What I mean. You could stay outside a bit to be like a bit like home, Swansea.
Yeah, but I had friends who I used to live outside, and they'd come up to Barnet and they'd be like, "Wow, this is too busy for me. I don't know how you live here." So like these guys, you know, and best of my best friends now, they're just like, "I don't know what you're doing living in the city." But
did you have like, were you the type of guy who had like the typical, like what we imagine, the stereotypical like young footballer crib with like the 96 inch television and like the super stereo or what? No, when I'm talking about 22 year, 21, 22
year, 21, of course. Ben, yeah. Like, yeah.
You had that, and like, did you have the PlayStation?
I didn't go over the top, but yeah, of course, I had the PlayStation for after training. That I used to come home and
what did you
waste
play?
My time? Call of Duty
or
FIFA. Simply, just that it was. There was no other games. Call of Duty used to be a training ground game. We'd train together. We'd go home. Everybody'd get on the headsets, and we'd all play together back at Tottenham. That was a good crew.
And FIFA, like when you play FIFA, inevitably stupid question, but do you ever play with teams that you're on?
Nah.
Yeah. You always
go for better players on FIFA.
2015-16 season. That is the year that Leicester wins a title.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a year where.
Should have been you.
I was sure that Spurs are going to win the title. Is that how you viewed it from the inside? Did you say, like, we should have won this title?
I think in hindsight, yes, you could probably look at it that way. But that season, it was quite up and down. But we always felt like we were there.
Yeah.
But it was a season that felt like from November that, okay, Leicester are doing well, but there's no way they're going to keep this up.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kept going. And that kept going. I think a big loss we had where we lost to Leicester at home. They scored from a corner, a set piece, and we dominated them. And we lost that game. And it just opened up a little bit of a gap that I don't think we ever really got close to after that. But it really was a mentality like, okay, if we keep winning, they're going to drop points at some point. But credit to Leicester that year, they went to City away and they won. They were picking up big results. And it was tough at the time. We felt like, okay, our time's going to come, and it never did that year. And it was tough to look back on. I think that was a big opportunity we probably missed.
Is that the best team that you played in as Spurs, or would you say the team that went to the Champions League final, for example, was better? Or this? I mean, Dele was.
Yeah, I think that if you look back at it, that was the best team. Those consecutive years, 2017-18, and. Probably the year we went to the Champions League final, we didn't even play our best football that year. But the 16-17, 17-18 were good years. We were a good team, and like I said, at times it felt easy. It felt like we were going into games, and we knew, okay, we play our football our way today, we're gonna win.
I wouldn't switch it to Wales because otherwise, Jules's the Welsh side of Jules's family is gonna get him into a lot of trouble. I mean, I think in terms of achievement, you were part of the most successful Welsh side ever, although it really is apples and oranges because, 1958, John Charles, whatever, like it's just a different setup. But when you went on that run at the Euros, you talk about belief. I'm assuming you never had a game like you had it sometimes at Spurs where you felt that you'd won before you went on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it was different.
You knew but can you just talk a bit about
the start when you qualified? Start when, because it has been so long.
So yeah, exactly. Look, we knew we had a good team. We had 12, 13 players we knew good enough we can contribute. After that, if we had a few injuries, we were finding it tough. But when we had the group draw, we looked at it and we thought, okay, this could be our opportunity this time around. And there was a whole build-up to it that had been coming for a couple of years. We drew Belgium and Bosnia were really our competitors to go to the Euros. And we started, we played Andorra away, struggled. It was the first time we played a 3-5-2 and not many people were playing it, but it was to get all of our best players playing as much as we could. Andorra, we struggled. I think Gareth got us out of trouble, not for the first time, with a free kick away. So we kind of snuck through that. We played Bosnia at home, drew 0-0. A bit sticky again, wasn't a great performance. We beat Cyprus. So ultimately, a good start to the group, but we haven't played anybody other than Bosnia. That is where we're going to pick up points. And then something just clicked. It became a team where everybody knew their roles and responsibilities, but we had a superstar on our team with Gareth Bale that could do anything. Aaron Ramsey was playing some amazing football at the time. And there was a defensive unit and probably a midfield too that knew our best way to get success here is to put your egos aside.
Yeah.
Work as hard as we can not to concede and get the ball to the best two players. And that was a very basic, basic tactical analysis of what we were doing. And we had Gareth, who at the time could score from anything. You could give him the ball anywhere and he would do it. And that ultimately got the best out of him and it got the best for Wales.
So it is that simple. It's like people talk about, I mean, it must also take some humility as well from your manager at the time saying, like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, patterns of play and stuff like that, maybe against Cyprus. But
maybe that's a bit naive for us to say that we didn't do anything.
No, obviously.
Yeah.
You had set pieces and whatever. But ultimately, why wouldn't I ride the responsibility of these two kind of next level players that I have in my team?
Mm-hmm.
One, obviously, next level.
Yeah.
And everybody else will understand it because everybody else ultimately want Wales to do well. And you're not going to get annoyed that, wait, why can't I bring the ball out of the back and be Beckenbauer? Because sometimes I do that for Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
No, because it doesn't work here.
Exactly. And we were very tactically disciplined. I think that comes with a humility. It's like without the ball, we were solid. We went on, I think we conceded 2 or 3 in the qualifying campaign. We were very good defensively. But we knew that offensively it wasn't a game, we're better off giving it to this very, very, very good player who could do some incredible stuff. But the manager we had, Chris Coleman at the time, was great with the team. The morale was incredible. We used to stay overnight in away trips so that the boys could have a night out together. It was that level of brothers, camaraderie that we used to get. And I remember in the Euros, the first game, I think he took Simon Church, who was a striker at Reading at the time, aside and said, look, you're not starting tomorrow for the team. I'm going to play Gaz. And Simon Church would be like, well, obviously, as if I was going to play. You know what I mean? But it was that level of just, we were all friends. We all knew our roles. Even the guys who weren't starting were just so grateful to be a part of what we were doing. It was some of the best times I've had in football.
It was the England game. Obviously, it was in France. I covered a lot of it for ESPN and the BBC, and I was at the England game in Lens. Did that result, in a way, made you believe a bit more that there was actually something to do more than just trying to get out of the group? Or how, when you get to that, especially the rivalry between the two countries and stuff?
Yeah, that was, honestly, that was very disappointing. That was probably one of the most disappointing moments I've had in football. It was not us. We kind of went into our shell a bit. And the other games, we played well and got results. We had to be solid. We had to sort of, you know, fight without the ball for times. But the England game, we were a bit nervy. And I remember after the game, I think because it was England as well.
Yeah.
It's the biggest game we have for Wales. And it was not us. After the game, everybody was down in the dumps. I remember Gaz just coming and saying, boys, don't worry. Like, we've been here before. Backs against the walls. Let's have a go. And the manager wanted to give us the day off the next day. And the boys, to credit them, was like, no, we want to train. We need to do this properly. And look, it's easy, an emotional decision. You're off, relax, get out of your head. No, boys, we trained. We went to a little restaurant by the seaside as a team. We all had like burger and fries, relaxed by the coast. And we were like, we're actually not in a bad place. We need to go against Russia in the next game, win, and we go through. And I think that game we played against Russia was
one of the best Welsh performances
we've put in a long time. And it was like a weight lifted off our back that game against England. It still hurts now seeing them running down the touchline, conceding the 94th minute. Yeah, it was a blow, but it showed us that if we wanted to be successful in this tournament, we couldn't just rely on us being defensive and just letting guys try and score a free kick or something. Yeah, we had to have a go, and that's what we did, and we were good.
So you beat Russia, you qualify.
Yep.
Then is the last 16
against Northern Ireland
at the Parc des Princes,
which is definitely not a game for the ages, I don't think.
No, but really, the atmosphere that day, because I was there too, was amazing.
Yeah, it was.
And
amazing.
The Welsh fans were, and the Irish fans, the Northern Irish were amazing.
That was a great game. But the show on the pitch, I don't think, was too much to write home about. I remember that game was pretty boring.
Yeah,
to be honest, it was very matched up. I remember a couple of boys, Neil Taylor, and I think one of the Northern Irish, who was playing right wing back, both defensive minded, were both like, why are us two here? We're just cancelling each other out during the game. It was pointless. And then, like, that was a game, find a way to win.
Yeah.
Bit of quality again from Gareth. And we did.
And then Belgium.
Chaos. The first 5 minutes of that game. It was...
So how were you...
I was on a yellow card to start. Yeah. Knew I was getting suspended if I missed the game. So got booked in 2 minutes, which is insane. I couldn't believe I got booked. But at least that point, I was like, well... All right, that's out the way. I don't have to think about that anymore.
I'll be back. You were like, I'll be back for the final?
Well, yeah. Well, afterwards.
Afterwards. Did you go into that game, just before you talk about the game, did you go into that game like, okay, we're the underdogs, we've got nothing to lose? Did you go with like, we can do something? Did you believe, believe?
We had Belgium in our qualifying group.
Yeah, true.
And we beat them at home and drew with them away. So we kind of felt like quiet confidence. Every interview we did, we were like, yeah, we're up against the highest ranked team here, they've got incredible players. Yeah, first 3 or 4 minutes, I got booked. We cleared one off the line.
Yeah.
Nainggolan then put one in the top corner, which was a phenomenal goal. And those are the kind of goals where you just have to hold your hand up and say, no, like, we can defend as well as we want. He's put it in the top corner from 30 yards. What can you do? And from then on, we played some phenomenal football. I've watched that game back a few times.
Have you?
And we were... We were good.
I
we played good football.
It.
It wasn't like a smash and grab that we got our goals. We created chances. We played well. We got up the park. It was a good performance. Yeah. And yeah, the last 10 minutes were a little bit crazy, but yeah, it was incredible.
I mean, the Al Robson Kanu goal, which is a lovely guy, you know, but he would never ever score. I don't even know how, because I was shouting for him to pass the ball instead of doing that turn.
We all were. I couldn't believe what he did. I could not believe what he did, but it was insane. And looking back, we all thought that after the game, I remember talking with the guys, we thought that goal was 70, 80 minutes into the game. It was like 56 or something like this. There was still a lot to go, but we scored and we were like, oh my God, we're ahead, we've won. Like, that was our thinking. We were so strong defensively in those tournaments. We were thinking, if we did score, we're not going to concede here. Well, like, we can at least go most of the way.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously then Sam Vokes scored phenomenal header, which was chaos. Absolutely. I remember we were on the pitch enjoying, and Chris Gunter was next to the manager. I think he said to him, like, remember these moments, they don't have to happen often. And that was basically our whole mindset. It was like, and maybe the semi-final was one step too far, because the dream became, man, actually one more game, we're in a final here. Yeah. And maybe that's where the mindset changed a little bit. I got suspended, Aaron Ramsey got suspended. Yeah. Two, you know, starters every other game weren't playing. It probably was one step too far for us, but what a summer that was.
Incredible, man. Because the World Cup was, on the other hand, a bit more disappointing.
Yeah, very.
Very. Although you still played in the World Cup, though, so that's pretty special.
Yeah, the best moment of that World Cup for us as Wales was probably qualifying.
Yeah.
That was the reality. To say that we would go into the World Cup was one of the best feelings I've had in football. When, you know, 1958, it was Wales don't qualify for the World Cup. It's always really hard. And we finally had got there, and we got to Qatar, and it wasn't right. We weren't anything near our best self. Mm. And it's a regret looking back at it. We could have shown a much better version of Wales than we did at that World Cup.
Obviously for Ben, he's closer to the end of his career than to the beginning, I think it's fair to say. And he's already, because he's so smart, he's already thinking about the post-football career.
And has been thinking about it for a long time.
And you know, I think we probably agree on that. I think you need to be smart to become a really good manager, whether you were a top player or not. I think we know enough not very clever players, and we can all say that they probably don't have a future on the bench. However, for him, it's a very different story, because he's so smart and has been such a great footballer with so many great influences through his career, that you could easily see him being a really good coach, can't you?
So obviously, that was the inevitable question to ask him.
Obviously, the older I've got in the game, I've you have to start thinking about that kind of thing. But I'm one of those guys that likes to plan for all eventualities. Like you said, I'm doing my coaching badges. I'll hopefully have my A license within the next month or so. I'd like to finish my pro license before I finish playing. That would be the ideal goal, because I think it would be a nice transition to go straight into coaching instead of being that guy who has no qualifications. You have to take 2 or 3 years out until you get the qualifications, and then you're ultimately on the outside of football trying to find your way back in. Whereas I feel I'm in a good position now. I want to play for as long as I can, but it's always in the back of my mind that you see some players now, as they're getting older, they go play for a club with the eye of turning into a coach in a year's time, or working with different managers to try and go down that route. And I think that's a route I'd like to go down first. As I've got older, I've started, you have to look at what all these managers are doing. You take notes, you see what works, what doesn't work, and then you formulate your own ideas. But that's the route I want to go down now. When I was injured last week, all the boys were in Dubai. I was doing my rehab, and post session I went to watch the under 13s Spurs Academy, and I'm on the side, and even watching that level, you can feel, you know, there's an intensity to it. There's a joy realizing you can speak to these kids and they hang on your word and they will listen, and you can actually give them some advice that, who knows, they might think I was talking nonsense, but give them some advice that might help them in their game. So yeah, that was my weekend watching
that's
them.
Good.
And then that's my first hope, and then also I have a big interest in like the business of sport as well, and business of football. And when I was young, conversely to what you said about me sitting at home playing my FIFA and my Call of Duty all the time, I was a bit of a nerd. I decided that's when I was going to do my business economics degree at university level. So I finished that when I was 26. So I've got that in the back pocket. I'm doing my business course with the PFA that they're running now, which is the equivalent of a master's degree. So look.
But that's quite unusual for.
It is, but
especially in this country.
In the Premier League, doing that.
Yeah, but I think, I grew up with an emphasis on education. It probably goes back to that feeling of what if football doesn't work out when I was younger. And when I moved to Tottenham, I signed here, it could easily have been like, I have made it this done. But you have to prepare for all eventualities in life. And I thought a good use of my time in the afternoons would be to get my head in some books, some maths and economics books. But it's not for everybody, but I think it put me in good stead going forward. And I think that's a route that, look, I'm going to try and see how the coaching stuff goes first. If it's up my street, great. But I think even if I try that first, it gives me a better grounding, a better understanding of the whole industry of football from all different angles, that if I then want to go on the business side or the office side of football, then I have that option.
How much, and a lot of the players talk about that moment where they became a dad or they had a family, and that it changed the perspective, and maybe after the defeat, put stuff in perspective again. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was incredible. Put it this way, I'm glad I didn't have a kid like some of the young guys in our team who spent the whole football career with a little man. He's not. It's you definitely lose out on some sleep, but it's the best feeling ever. It was crazy. I had my first son was born July the 10th, and I think we left for pre-season on July the 14th, so I had to go to Australia for 10 days, which was incredibly tough. My wife was amazing. She's an incredible mum with him. And it's one of the best feelings in life. I think it ultimately makes you want to make them proud. And every time I can, every time I have to train in, I love to spend some time with him. And as a family, you realise that family is the most important thing in life.
Hope you enjoyed our conversation with Ben Davies as much as I did, and I know Jules did. Stay tuned, because part two, where he talks about all his influences, all his teammates and coaches, from Conte to Mourinho to Pochettino to Heung-Min Son to Gareth Bale to Chris Coleman.
Harry Kane.
And that Harry Kane fella. Yeah, I think they were pretty tight at one point and still are. So that's going to be dropping next week.